Now, anyone who hoped to know presidential results last night or even this morning were likely disappointed.
Yeah, while only a handful of states have still not been called for either candidate, the current margins are close enough that the whole shebang can't be called just yet.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you expect the presidential race to be this close in Wisconsin? What about across the country? Did you or anyone you know change which party they voted for in the presidential race since 2016? What caused that switch? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org.
Laura Brown is an associate professor and the director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of multiple books, including her most recent Amateur Hour, Presidential Character and the Question of Leadership. And she's our guest now. Laura, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on today.
The election results are trickling out slowly, and yet things change very quickly. So let's start with what we know right now. Which states have not been called for either Trump or Biden?
Sure. So Arizona is a little uncertain in the sense that some organizations have called it, others have not, but it is certainly leaning toward the former Vice President Joe Biden. And there are some absentee ballots that have yet to be counted. We expect those to be counted a little bit later today and some news later this evening. We still have Georgia that has yet to be counted fully. There are absentee ballots, especially coming from counties around Atlanta that have not yet processed all of their absentee ballots. And those are still outstanding. That state, I would say, is truly a toss-up. It looks like it's on the knife's edge for one party or the other. North Carolina, the president is currently leading in. There are not as many states left, ballots left to be counted in that state, but there are still certainly enough that it is creating some uncertainty there. And then Nevada, that is, again, leaning toward the former vice president, and yet there are still ballots left to count. And then the big one, which sort of everyone's waiting for, is really Pennsylvania, where there are more than a million estimated ballots left to be counted. And while the president is currently leading in the vote count, those absentee ballots are mostly coming from the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh cities. And so we anticipate they will be heavily for the former vice president. And as a result, it looks likely at the moment that Pennsylvania could go toward Biden.
So each candidate is looking for those 270 electoral college votes needed to win. And Pennsylvania is a big piece of it. So, though, was Wisconsin, and Wisconsin did go for Biden. How big of a deal is that for either candidate?
Well, I think it's a very big deal. What we've seen in the last few hours is that Wisconsin was called for Biden, and so too was Michigan. And what this tells us is that the former vice president did a good job in rebuilding that blue wall that essentially had Democratic voters voting for Donald Trump in 2016. Those were states that he took by the narrowest of margins, and it appears as though they have now trended back toward the Democratic camp. And that's really all Biden needed to win. But I think it is interesting that we see these changes in Arizona and potentially these changes in Georgia. It speaks to a very different future for the Democratic Party going forward.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
Well, I think one of the things that is so interesting is that North Carolina and Georgia were much more Republican states in the last election. They appear to be sort of trending Democratic and trending that way substantially, partly because those states have populations that are growing, not just in terms of immigrants, but also in terms of migrants, meaning Americans that are moving to those states from other states. And the next time that we actually have a presidential election, it is likely that both Georgia and North Carolina and Florida will in fact have more electoral votes, not fewer, because we are headed into a reapportionment year where the census will change the number of House seats in each state, and that will in turn change the relative weight of the states within the Electoral College.
Sure, definitely. And we should note that the Washington Post, New York Times calling Michigan for Biden. AP is what NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio use, and it doesn't look like AP has made that determination quite yet. We're talking with Laura Brown, who's director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. We're taking stock of where we are as we process what's happening in our presidential election. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR2. We've got Nancy in Minocqua on the line. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
What's on your mind? Great. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say in 2012, I voted Republican. And I switched in 2016 to the Green Party because I didn't like either candidate. And this year I went with Biden because I just got so tired of all of the bullying and all the lies that Trump was spouting out everywhere. And I didn't think that he handled the coronavirus at all for the people of America.
Nancy, thanks for your perspective on that. And Laura, Nancy saying, I voted for a third party candidate last time around when this president won. And now she switched, you know. That is part of one of the factors here that we're dealing with as we watch states go for one candidate or the other.
So that's right. I mean, let me just say that Nancy is completely, I think, typical of many Americans who, when they look at the two political parties, are not thrilled by either party's kind of ideological commitments or kind of vitriolic and acrimonious you know, kind of combat that they get into with each other. And one of the things that we have seen over time is that many people have said that they consider themselves to be independents. And when you believe that an election is not going to turn on your vote, then you tend to see this independent or third party vote increase. And it's significant that in 2016, 6% of the electorate voted third party or independent candidate. That's not a small amount. It is also what kept Hillary Clinton below that majority level. And that's partly why we saw this change with the Electoral College and the popular vote winner.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Donald Trump won the Electoral College and therefore the presidency. We know that Joe Biden has garnered more votes than any other presidential candidate. Could that be the case again here with this split?
I don't think so. I think what we are headed toward is that he will be both a popular vote majority president as well as a majority of the states president. One of the things we have to realize is that when a candidate does not earn over that 50% mark, it is not completely unheard of. In fact, when candidates earn 48% of the vote, we've seen three times since 1860 that the Electoral College, that's when it inverts. And really, if you think about it, it's because if you only win 48% of the popular vote, it means that 52% of the electorate voted against you. So what is interesting about where we are is that, you know, in 2016, Donald Trump, though he did not win the popular vote, he won the majority of states. And now we are going to, I think, be headed toward an election where the winner will have won both. And the Electoral College will follow that.
I want to welcome now Samantha in Whitehall to our discussion about presidential candidates. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have voted since I was 18. I'm 39 now, and I voted Republican every time because of the stance of their, you know, against the abortion. And I have, the Democrats are, you know, I believe are for, you know, abortion, the right to choose, and that's, you know, one of the big stance. And I have a friend that is a big Democrat, but the only thing that he has a problem with is her stance on the abortion. I said that should be the number one thing you think of before you vote for anybody.
Interesting. Samantha, yeah, I want to jump in here because I want Laura to be able to respond, because Samantha, our second caller, thanks for calling in, different than Nancy, because Samantha's saying, this is my number one issue. I vote based on this issue. And we do know that there are voters that will decide on one issue and they will consistently vote based only on that. How does that play into our presidential politics?
Well, it certainly does. And this is where you see that the parties, in terms of their actual base of support, has been more consistent over time, because what you basically see is that people who are committed to a set of platform ideas on one side or the other are going to stick with that party because they know that that party articulates their viewpoint. What is true is that when you go back to the 1990s in this country, we had many more kind of cross pressures with regard to partisans who held different policy views. Over the last 25 years, we've seen essentially the policy views and the partisanship align. And that is partly why there's so much kind of polarization in our country, because there's much more rigidity. But when you actually go back to the 1990s, we did see sort of pro-life Democrats, and we actually saw some pro-choice Republicans.
We're looking at what we do and don't know about the results for our presidential election with Laura Brown. She's the director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's also an associate professor there.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you expect to wake up to final results this morning, or even to have them before heading to bed last night? The expectations were we would not. Do you feel like it's a good sign that the process is deliberate, that votes are being counted over time? Are you happy with the way the process is working? What do you think about the results you've seen so far? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org.
This conversation continues here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Keeley Boltina. Right now we're talking with Laura Brown about what we know and what we don't know when it comes to results for our presidential election. She is an associate professor at George Washington University and the director of the Graduate School of Political Management.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about what's going on so far, what you've seen, and your reactions to the vote counts that are in. Call 800-642-1234.
And we've got Tom from Madison on the line who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm concerned about the Electoral College. As it stands now, almost every state that has a huge majority in one candidate or another are disenfranchised. For instance, if California wins by, let's just say there's 10 million votes in California, 5 million votes, if only 2 million votes go one way and 8 million votes go the other way, they get 55. Electoral votes.
Yeah, Tom, we get you there, because it seems like maybe in these big states with the Electoral College, Tom is pointing out that it might feel like your vote doesn't matter as much, especially if you are not, you know, the prevailing opinion here. What about the Electoral College, Laura? It comes up every time.
It does come up every time, especially when our elections are this close. So let me just say that how we get to a state's electoral vote allocation is the combination of how many House seats that state has, and then obviously each state has two senators. So California is weighted for its population. It has 53 House seats, which means it gets 53 of its electoral votes from its large population. Two, it then also gets for its senators. So it has a total of 55. But I always think that it's important to recognize that the problem with this sort of not being counted is actually a bigger problem of how states allocate their electors rather than it is the Electoral College itself. So, for instance, in every state except for Maine and Nebraska, the state allocates those electors in a winner-take-all fashion. If, in fact, those electors were allocated proportionally, what you would actually see is that whatever the popular vote was in the state is about the proportion of electoral votes that that party would get. And in fact, those two things would align, and it would force the candidates to, in fact, campaign in most states, because they would be interested in kind of running up the margin in some states just to get one or two more electoral votes. We don't do that because the political parties actually don't really want a competition across the entire country. The cost of that is extraordinary. And it is also kind of difficult to do. And if you really look back to when all of this changed, it changed beginning in 1800 with the battle between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams.
Yeah, so there's quite a long history there of this sort of divide here. Talking to Laura Brown, who's director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, and we're putting the presidential election into some context here as we watch the results come in today, tomorrow, as long as it takes. We've got Jenny from Weston on the line now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Question is, now that we're all done getting the actual votes in, how much do we really need to worry about one party or another, like what President Trump is stating now, you know, kind of questioning Pennsylvania and questioning those absentee votes and how long you can count them?
Jenny, thanks for the question. Laura, what do you think?
Well, so let me just say this. I really think we have to take a step back from where we are and kind of celebrate actually what we've done. At this point in time, less than 24 hours from all of the polls being closed, we have now counted over or nearly 140 million ballots. That is kind of extraordinary when you think about it. Over 100 million Americans cast their ballot prior to Election Day via an absentee or mail ballot. It is really extraordinary what we've done. And what we're really looking at is that there are essentially a couple million ballots across a handful of states that just have yet to be counted. They were, in fact, already cast, and they just need to complete those counts so that the states can have a total of where things are. I would honestly say that I am disheartened when I hear sort of the president talking about the idea that these votes just sort of show up in some, you know, potentially or allegedly fraudulent way. That's not the way this is. And we are completely within the realm of what is normal for counting ballots. Even if we just kind of remind ourselves back to 2000, we spent more than 30 days trying to sort out the ballots in Florida. Spending, you know, 48 hours is just not something to be worried about.
Well, and so that's one aspect of it. There's also this piece that involves the U.S. Postal Service. Yesterday, a U.S. district judge ordered the USPS to conduct a ballot sweep in 12 postal processing facilities covering 15 states. What happened here, and why are we talking about it right now?
Well, I mean, we're engaged in this conversation because it has come out that there have been 300,000 ballots nationwide that were entered into the post office system, but were not sort of scanned to show that they were received by these election officials. And in many states, including most of the states that are still being contested, there is a requirement that ballots must not only be cast before Election Day, but in fact received on Election Day. So there is some question about what is the remedy for this. Was there a potential disenfranchisement of 300,000 people who believe they cast their ballots? And was this the fault of the post office, and was that fault perhaps intentional? There are a lot of questions for the court to sort out, but I do think, and I think it's important to realize, that the courts have consistently sided with the voters as we have approached this election season. We just had a court case in Texas where they basically said, look, it didn't matter that these ballots were cast by drive-through. That was a problem of the election administration. You still need to count those more than 127,000 ballots. And this is really heartening because at the end of the day, the courts do want the votes to count, and everybody who's involved in a campaign should want their voters to have their votes counted.
Laura, we're paying attention, of course, to what's happening right now. Thank you so much for joining us at this stage of the game.
Absolutely. A delight to be on this afternoon.
Laura Brown is an associate professor and the director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of multiple books, including the most recent called Amateur Hour, Presidential Character, and the Question of Leadership. And she joined us for the latest on the presidential election.
As votes in the presidential election continue to be counted, we're reporting on developments. Join us tonight at 8 for an NPR election update special with the latest news from around the country here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can also follow developments, including Wisconsin election results, at WPR.org.